I wanted to find something to balance the first half of the program with this massive monumental work on the second half. And Mozart, in his evolution, in his compositional evolution, went through so many different styles personally. Now, to a non-trained ear, Mozart is going to sound like Mozart, whether it was something he wrote when he was 12 or there in his early 30s, right before he died. Nevertheless, I love Mozart. He's always been one of my favorite composers. And when we are programming concerts with the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra or any other orchestra that I conduct, it's often a desire to use something with a full symphony orchestra. So having these reduced forces, which are required for the Requiem, gives me the opportunity to choose something for a smaller orchestra, and to me it's a grand invitation to look for some other Mozart. I chose the Symphony No. 29 because it, in my opinion, is his first major symphonic winner. Of course, he wrote, I mean, it's amazing to think at the age of 18, mm-hmm. Mozart had already written 28 other symphonies before this time. But with the exception of maybe the 25th Symphony, which was written only 5 months before the 29th Symphony, we don't hear the sort of depth that became the wonder that was late Mozart in his symphonic writings, those things that go toward Beethoven's style. The early Mozart symphonies were almost like Italian overtures, very short, some as short as 10 minutes long. But this Symphony, No. 29, is the first example in the symphonic output that really has the scope and the breadth and the depth, in my opinion, that was to be the signature of the late symphonic style of Mozart. And it's just, it's wonderful, and it shows what he can do with a small band. I mean, it's strings, two oboes, and two horns, yet the first movement begins very softly, which is unusual for the symphonies in those days. The audience was accustomed to having something that would rouse their attention into place. But the second movement, this beautiful andante, uses muted strings, which was not new for Mozart. But the colors that he creates and the progression of the melody through the movement are brilliant. And at the points where he uses the two oboes and the two horns as a quartet are reflective of some of the most wonderful things that he does in his operatic writing later. So it really does begin this final phase of his symphonic development. And besides, I just simply love the 29th Symphony. And to me, that's a great balance for the very weighty Requiem on the second half.
Well, yes. I mean, here you have this, relatively speaking, this reduced band, as you say, in the first half of the program. And then you have 200 voices, and you have this grand majesty. Quite a difference. What does that mean for you and the musicians? Or is it another day at work? Okay, smaller band here, intermission, big.
I have a penchant for equating music with food, mm-hmm. and because I love them both desperately. But this the beginning program, and I should mention that at the very beginning of the program, the Schola Cantorum from the University of Arkansas, who are performing as part of the chorus on the second half of the program, will sing an a cappella work by Augusta Reed Thomas, a distinguished composer who is in residence in Fayetteville at the university. She wrote a 3-minute work called Alleluia, and it's also a delightful work linking to the sacred nature of the second half of the Requiem. So we begin with that, and then the lighter but very rich Symphony No. 29, but it's a great balance. Too much of a good thing would be too weighty, either in light music or very serious and deep music. But it really does provide what I consider to be a wonderful balance from this fresh, effervescent Symphony No. 29 to the very severe, in many ways, Requiem. Now, of course, most people are familiar with the exciting moments and the very dark, serious moments of the Requiem, but there are sublime moments that, again, connect to some of the writing, not really in his symphonic writing so much from the Requiem, but to his operatic writing in the second act of Magic Flute and Zarastro's hymn-like music. It's interesting to think about the Requiem being almost void of vocal virtuosity. The writing for the vocal soloist quartet is always as a unit, with the exception of the baritone that sings at the beginning of the Tuba Mirum, which there are reasons why that is a single voice. But the writing, both chorally for the solo vocal quartet and the orchestra, tends to be almost hymn-like in nature, where there is an avoidance of any sort of show or overt show of virtuosity. And as the Requiem begins with this very gentle and rather velvety darkness, the orchestra emerges almost like sunshine. And you'll forgive my analogies and metaphors, but I just it is a journey, not only because we begin and end with almost the same music in the Requiem, but we really go through the gamut of emotions, compositional output, melodic and harmonic development.
In rehearsal or performance, when you have a large number of voices, do you have to professionally consider that a single instrument, the chorus, or is it nuanced and you think of it as a multifaceted number of instruments?
Outstanding question. The answer is both. Mm. Certainly, the chorus must function as a single unit. If it's in four parts, in two parts, if it's unison, it must function as one. And often it is an element of the sonority that is considered a voice. The contrapuntal nature of some of the writing in the Requiem requires that there are four distinct voices, and often all four of them highly ornamented, or at least florid, I should say, and they must be taken separately. If they're doubled with the orchestra, then we have the doubling of a solo voice. But sometimes in the busiest parts, musically speaking, of the Requiem, with all of the instruments doubling the voices or coming in and out and supporting certain parts of the phrase, we will only have four distinct voices, whether it's being doubled by the violin and the oboes or clarinets in the Requiem, or if it's just voices. And it really does shift constantly. It's one of the wonders of Mozart that he can come in and out of a massive full orchestral and choral sonority down to something that's very intimate, but still the same number of voices are present.
Finally, shifting gears a little bit, this will put the final note on this season for the Arkansas Philharmonic. Looking back, what do you think, and what can we expect when fall 2011 rolls around?
I must say, and of course I'm partial to the Arkansas Philharmonic, but I must say that the season has been an extraordinary and a resounding success. We wanted to present four concerts that were each dynamically different in their intent to reflect the mission of the orchestra. And I should say, the Arkansas Philharmonic is a professional orchestra, not a community orchestra or a civic orchestra. I don't think those titles mean anything to anyone outside the music business, but it is a professional orchestra with a keen and very strong commitment to the community. We created four concerts this year that would reflect the sort of concerts we thought would attach to the community. One with a Russian violinist at the beginning of the year, one of the most wonderful talents on the planet these days, Alexander Markov, which was a big success. Our holiday program combined with the Ozark Bronze Handbell Choir, but also the Fayetteville Jazz Collective for this Tchaikovsky and Duke Ellington Nutcracker.
Which, a completely ambitious
and it was
performance.
It was really a wonderful success. We sold out to the Air and Arts Center, and it put us on the map with people that really were unaware that the Arkansas Philharmonic existed. In February, our concert was delayed because of that nasty little snowstorm that came through, but we repeated the first weekend in March, a Cartoon Classics, a family concert that played symphonic masterworks, including some very challenging things like Stravinsky's Firebird, the Overture to the Barber of Seville and such, and then showed the correlation and collaboration with these animation artists who created a new art form. And this last concert with the orchestra and a chorus is another facet of doing something very different to explore what it is that is suitable to this region and this community. I think to be dynamically connected to the community is one thing, but to also be involved in the creation of a music organization requires that we talk to the public. We really understand what it is that they desire, to hear and to see and to support. And we've done that and gotten some tremendously wonderful feedback, but most of all, support. It has been overwhelming how positive people have been to us, and we are doing outreach. We've begun our outreach program. Tomorrow we're taking part of the Arkansas Philharmonic to Branson, Missouri, to collaborate with a group from Springfield, Missouri. And that is the beginning of our season, not only in scope, but also in the outreach to this entire Northwest Arkansas region and beyond into other states. So I'm delighted. I really can say, on behalf of the Arkansas Philharmonic, it has been a stupendously successful year, and I'm excited for 2011-2012.
April 23rd is the final concert of this season. People can go online, arkansasphilharmonic.org.
Correct.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.